And now, a segment from the Best of the Night Side with Barb DiGiulio podcast. Listen and download the latest podcast at newstalk1010.com.
My guest this hour is Dr. Frank Mara. He's a psychotherapist who works with adolescents and young adults. And well, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you work a lot with young adults and adolescents, but you also do families and couples. You sort of cover the gamut of everything.
Full gamut, yes.
Okay, so what is the difference between a psychotherapist and a psychiatrist?
Okay, so a psychotherapist can come from a number of backgrounds, mine's being doctored in psychology, but you have psychotherapists that are masters in social work. And with psychiatrists, that means you come from a medical background. You've gone to medical school, and a lot of your awareness happens to be with the brain and how the brain functions and medication scripts that can be effective. Some psychiatrists are also psychotherapists, but very few of them are. So very few psychiatrists are going to sit with you for an hour and discuss your problems and discuss strategies and offer interpretations about what's going on. Sometimes that's confusing for people because I think in the television that a lot of us grew up with, that was the type of psychiatrist that was out there, but there are few and far between right now that do both.
So I'm going to just put something out there, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I'm thinking that the type of psychiatrist that will prescribe you something,
yes,
is that less of a thing now?
Less, I would say more. Psychiatrists, their primary responsibility is prescribing medications that have some sort of effect on the brain chemistry and that can offer some sort of relief and recalibration of the chemistry to help somebody function at a better level.
So is that sort of the equivalent of going to your medical doctor? If you're suffering from depression, you could go to a psychiatrist and get the same?
But this medical doctor has a specialization of the brain and also the mind. So he's a specialist.
So is that a case where you might refer one of your clients to a psychiatrist?
Yeah. So on some occasions, the work that I'm doing with my clients can be effective, but it needs to be some sort of collaboration with a psychiatrist because potentially the work we're doing is not sufficient and the patient might be a good candidate for seeing a psychiatrist and getting that added benefit of a medication script, often for anxiety or depression.
So you do a lot of work with adolescents and young adults. How did you end up in that area? I'll let you just take that.
My wife would say I ended up in that area because I've not gravitated too far from adolescents myself.
You can really relate to your clients?
Absolutely. I do like adolescents. Adolescents are a fresh population. I often find them very authentic to their feelings, authentic to their place in the world. They're very curious people. But more on point with your own question, mine was just a certain coincidences and happenstance that led me into this area. And once I ended up in the area, as I say, the population has always been vitalizing for me and is interesting for me on a day-to-day basis. So it's a place where I've continued to maintain a client base.
How many years have you been practicing?
22.
So how has your practice changed with the introduction of social media?
Wow. It's a more complex playing field, of course. So, I mean, it's hard to be in this profession. You work through the lens of your own past experience and, the lens of growing up and going through adolescence, going through high school, going to university, and hearing stories from my clients about their new experience that has all these other caveats attached to it now, which are social media. I often say to them in a candid way, I'm glad I didn't have that added complexity because it is a lot of added complexity and a lot of added responsibility attached to it that needs to be attended to at a very young age.
I often feel that my teenage years would have been much more stressful, not that they weren't, but much more stressful if we had had Twitter and Facebook, and I don't know how I would have gone through my teenage years.
I absolutely agree. Barb, in my generation, somebody in elementary school or in high school may have passed a note around the class.
Yes.
But now that note takes off and jumps and grows so quickly, it's hard to put your mind around it. So I think I agree. I feel fortunate that I didn't go through the stress of that, but I'm very empathetic to, you know, our adolescents and young adults now that need to contend with that.
Well, and I think we've got a unique situation with parents who didn't have that raising kids who do have that.
Yeah.
So we can't relate to a lot of what they're going through, and especially this whole piece about, you know, topless or nude pictures and this sort of thing being distributed among kids. That just adds a whole other angle to it.
Absolutely. I would preface that or add a caveat. We can't relate fully. It's not the experience that we went through, but we can relate to impulsiveness of our own youth, making short-sighted decisions, sometimes having a gap in our responsibility or our ability to be responsible. So we can relate to some of it. So we can get our toe into the water of it. And if we're willing enough and genuine enough, our adolescents can bring us along. They can inform us.
What would be the main issue or the main couple of issues that young adults are dealing with these days?
Well, I mean, this is from just in terms of the psychopathology. The standards are proven out to be statistically anxiety and depression. And then also closely behind that in terms of my practice are excesses in alcohol use and drug use. So those are the three.
What age range would you say that's starting at now? Or,
well, it's hard to...
That's kind of a scary thing when you think about that.
Yeah. Provocative, I can't put an age on it, but there are kind of outliers out there that can start at a very young age. I mean, this is popping into my consciousness, the Drew Barrymores of the world. I mean, that doesn't just take place in high school. We have in high school in Hollywood, we have examples of that in our own schools.
That's a scary thing.
Yeah, it's a certain scary, but that's an exceptional circumstance, certainly not the average.
And with adults that you deal with, what would you say common issues would be?
The same. Anxiety and depression are the kind of standard mental health issues.
Is that happening more so now, or are we paying more attention to it now?
I mean, both are perspectives that get bantered around quite a bit, at least from my point of view. You know, I just deal in the existential journey of the person. And worrying a lot about the future or falling into a hopeless position seem like kind of standard default positions in being a human being. And what I mean by that in a very respectful way, for all of us, it's not easy being human. These two positions, being overly focused, our worries in the future, are hopeless about our ability to get through it, would seem to me to have been standard positions throughout the ages.
Welcome back to The Night Side, Barb DiGiulio. My guest this hour is Dr. Frank Mara. He's a psychotherapist dealing extensively with young adults and adolescents. He also deals with families and with couples. And he is here to answer your questions. This is all for free. I might have to pay him at the end of the hour, but you don't have to. So don't worry about it. 416-872-1010, star talk, star 8255. You can text us at 71010. And we started off talking about dealing with teens and ways for parents to better communicate with teens. I have two teenage sons, and it's a really interesting minefield sometimes when it comes to talking with teens. And I think we're pretty lucky because our sons are, I think, pretty open with us compared to some other people I know. But there are some times that it's just kind of difficult to get through.
Absolutely. Teens today, there's so much going on. Whenever I understand that parents have any sort of ongoing communication with their adolescents, I always try to slow them down and try to get them to appreciate some credit, because that's a very positive place to be. Being able to talk in an ongoing way suggests that the parents are doing something successful. Now, of course, there will always be disruptions in that, but as long as the conversation is ongoing, evolving, and understandings are continuing to develop, then that's the key here.
Let's go to the phones, and you might need your headphones on for that. We'll give it a try. We've got John, who would like a question with Dr. Mara. Hey, John, welcome to The Night Side.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
I'm thinking that adolescents have a lot of difficulty in high school, and that's where they run into some difficulty with their peers. I'm wondering if Dr. Mara believes that or knows of supports available through the school system, and what he would say about those supports.
That's a great question.
Thanks. John, thank you very much for your question. Absolutely. I have an appreciation. My younger sister works in the Toronto Catholic District School System, School Board, and from my vantage point, one of the great resources of that school board are their Department of Social Work. The Department of Social Work, there are two significant departments. There's the Department of Social Work and the Department of Psychology. The Department of Psychology is essentially responsible for the psychometric testing.
Okay.
Which is very important, but leaves the Department of Social Work almost completely responsible for the mental health applications and being sure that all of these schools have significant services to respond to children and adolescents when they're experiencing the exact things that we talked about at the beginning of the show, anxiety, depression.
But does this start with a child going to a guidance counselor?
It can take a variety of different forms. Any interested party, a guidance counselor, a vice principal, a teacher, a parent, can bring it to the social worker's concern. And the luxury of the school boards that have these departments is that they can provide these backstops to the schools, to the students, to the parents. It's hard for me to think of a more vital and important department in any school than the social work department.
Well, let me ask John. John, are you aware of the social work department at your child's high school?
I actually am, and it was actually my son who suggested that, I believe it was the school social worker, would be helpful in for someone that he thought he could talk to. I wasn't sure whether it was a good idea or not, but it sounds like it is.
What was your son's friend's experience, John?
Sorry?
It's his son, not his son's friend.
Oh, it was his
friend.
Son.
Yeah.
Oh,
did
John,
your son actually go to the social worker?
Yes, he's seen the social worker, absolutely, for sure, and he feels very positive about it, and I'm kind of glad that he has somebody to speak to outside my own family.
Yeah, it's a very valuable experience. And sometimes, John, you bring up another key point here is about sometimes in our own families, our experience is so near. We're so near our children that sometimes when someone is a few steps removed, they provide a vantage point that is just unavailable to us as parents. You know, in my position, sometimes I have family and friends and say, I have a daughter, she's 5 years old, she's about to turn six, and they say, ask me, well, what if your daughter had to see a psychotherapist or, as John says, a social worker? How would you feel about that? I would feel very happy about that because as a parent, I have the awareness that I can't feel all the needs of my child. I have blind spots out of my love and concern for my child and of being so near to her, and that I know that helping professions that are able to, you know, fill out some of my blind spots are extremely valuable.
I think one of the positive, thank you, Dr. Marr. I think one of the positive experiences for me is that I know that my son has somebody to talk to. They're available. They're right at the school. At the same time, they're willing to connect with me and my wife as well if that's needed, and so it's appreciated. But
thanks, John.
Thanks
for the call. And you know what, though? I think that the teenage and high school years, it's a very difficult time even for parents.
Absolutely.
So it's great if the child has a resource at school.
Could I highlight one last point off of that?
Sure.
Car? The part about the resource being available at the school is unbelievably important. What I know about children and adolescents is when problems arise, one of the most important pieces is, can you apply some semblance of support or solution quickly? The idea or the availability of this service at the school cannot be valued enough. I mean, it's just a great, important value.
Well, I think it's important that you've told parents that this is a good, safe place for your kid to go if they have that option at school.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. Let's try to fit one more call in before we have to take a quick break. Hey, Jim, go ahead. You're with Dr. Mara.
Hi, good evening, Barb and Doctor. This might be an easy one for you, but I would like to get your definition of the brain and the mind. sometimes we equate the two, and I do know the brain is an organ, but we talk about the person's brain or mind, but they're not the same, are they?
Absolutely not. I mean, I don't want to get too philosophical, but the distinction to them becomes highlighted the most philosophically with Descartes, with the notion that there is this organ, our brain, and that's the wet science of who we are, and it has neurons and neurological pathways that things move. And sometimes we can easily understand that by thinking of that as being our hard drive, our hardwired system. Now, in addition to that, we have programs. Programs are mental programs, often built around representations of the world that we develop and evolve over a lived experience. That is the mind. And the exciting thing about the mind, to me, is that it's this program that continues to develop. It fleshes itself out over the course of our lived experience. Jim, I don't know if that's sufficient, but it is an interesting topic for me.
Okay, thanks a lot. And we're going to continue on with our calls as well. I loved your comment about the blind spots when dealing with our kids.
No,
it's
absolutely.
So true.
Yeah. I think it's important for us to be able to embrace that. I think to suggest otherwise is just fanciful.
416-872-1010, star talk, star 8255. Text us at 71010. My guest this hour is Dr. Frank Mara. He's a psychotherapist. He deals with adolescents, young adults, couples, and families. And we're taking your calls. Bill, we're going to get to you just as soon as we return. It's 824. You're listening to The Night Side on In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. Welcome back to the show. We are having a great hour with Dr. Frank Mara. He's a psychotherapist for adolescents, young adults, couples, families. We're taking your calls on anything that you have questions about. 416-872-1010, star talk, star 8255. You can text us at 71010. Have you thought about possibly going to see a psychotherapist? If you have any questions, Dr. Mara is here until 9 o'clock. Right now, we go back to the phones. We've got Frank on the line. Hi, Frank. Go ahead. You're on the Night Side.
Hi, Barb.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you? And
I'm good, thanks.
Good evening, Dr. Mara.
Hi, Frank.
If I could ask Dr. Mara his thoughts, I felt compelled to call after listening to your first caller earlier this evening. I believe his name was John.
Yes, okay. John called and spoke passionately about the importance of social workers in school.
Exactly, and that actually triggered something with me. My daughter had to see a school social worker, and it was a decision that was... essentially, we struggled with it, and I'm sure Dr. Mara will understand. For years, there was a certain stigma attached to openly talking about mental health issues, mental health awareness, specifically around depression.
Absolutely.
I'd just like to say that the social worker, in collaboration with the psychologist, really assisted in empowering my daughter around accepting this condition, as well as helping to spread awareness and spread the word about stopping the stigma around these this pathology. I'd just like Dr. Mara's thoughts on that.
Well, first, Frank, can I thank you for calling in and being so candid about this personal experience? You're right. Not so long ago, there would be a lot of parents that would feel stigmatized by that, even a semblance of shame. I can only say that a lot of work has happened on many levels to put assets in place to catch children when they're contending with some of these pathologies, the Department of Social Work being a big one in all of our school systems, and that didn't just happen. It took a lot of rallying stakeholders in the community, at the ministry, at the school boards. And now we have this system that is available to our kids that can catch them and also catch these, you know, pathologies. I mean, maybe I shouldn't use the word pathology because that has a heavy tone to it. As I said earlier in the show, I think it's quite natural as we go through this journey of being human beings to sometimes entertain a hopeless space or an anxious space. What becomes troublesome is when there aren't supports available to help coach our children about these spaces and how one can move through them, how one can understand them, how one can benefit from them. And I know that last one might sound provocative, but I mean that in exactly the way I said it. Anxiety has got this stigma to it, like it's a bad thing. Anxiety is not all a bad thing. All of us as human beings share the heritage that we are anxious at moments. It came about soon as we started to develop the ability to separate the past from the present to the future. Once our children or anyone who I work with in therapy gains some traction on anxiety, all of a sudden that becomes a signal in their life that informs their life, tells them how to respond to how they're feeling, how to adjust themselves in the world. This type of coaching and training is invaluable. It's a type of literacy in and of itself that we're only recently starting to understand the value of.
So, Frank, has this helped your daughter?
Well, I would like to say I agree with Dr. Mara's points wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And I guess in taking that further, Dr. Mara, I only wished the awareness was there when I was younger.
Yeah.
I find it's made its way into the mainstream.
Yeah.
We look at promotions like Bell Let's Talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Stop the Stigma campaign.
Stop the Stigma campaigns that are evident in some of our secondary schools. Mm-hmm. And I have to thank the support, the social worker, for helping to give me a greater understanding of the awareness, and as you mentioned, Dr. Mara, attempting to stop that stigma.
Oh. Thanks for your call, Frank. What a great call.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it really, things have changed so dramatically. I mean, I know families who have family members who dealt with mental health issues many years ago, and it was, you know, a family secret.
Yeah.
Nobody could talk about it. And things have changed so much.
Drastically.
Continue to change.
Yeah, and this very sentiment that he was underlining, I come across a lot too. People saying to me, I wish assets like these, awareness, appreciation, supports like social work in the schools, were available when I was younger. I have parents say to me, I think I've lost years in my life because I didn't have those type of coaching and supports aware to me. I mean, we have to understand this. I called it a literacy before. It is a literacy. It's becoming literate in a certain domain of our lived experience, how our thoughts work, how our emotions and feelings work, what sort of bearing they have on our behaviors. Once a person gains some sort of traction on that, all of a sudden they have levers to pull inside themselves, then give them quite a directiveness in the worlds that they live in.
We're with psychotherapist Dr. Frank Mara. If you have questions, 416-872-1010, Star Talk, Star 8255, text us at 71010. He deals with adolescents, young adults, couples, and families. Celia, we've got you on the night side. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead with your question or comment.
I'm talking about a young adult in mid-20s who finally has gotten his life together, realizes a lot of the things he was doing were snafuing him, causing great anxiety, finally got it together, now at the stage where he wants to move forward but just doesn't know what to do next. And who does one see about that? And how do you choose the person that you do go and see to help you move your life forward now that you've gotten yourself back on track?
What a great question.
Absolutely. Celia, I heard a couple of questions there, but if I could ask a few of my own. When you describe a journey and having gotten his life together somewhat in his mid-20s, what has the young man accomplished up to this point?
Almost an undergrad degree.
Wow.
Several jobs, you know, just smaller jobs, but because of the anxiety while he was going through it, you know, snafu'd himself at each of the jobs, did a good job until he snafu'd himself. Now, as I say, he's ready to, he's done all the work, ready to go back and either get a degree or move forward with a career or something, but he just is sort of stymied.
Yes.
And doesn't want to make the mistake of seeing one person and then it's not the right person and then maybe another person and it's not the right person. So it's a kind of a crazy question. But
No, not at all, Celia. It's a typical question. I'm not sure the answer I'm going to provide is one that you want, but sometimes it does require seeing a few people before a good fit avails itself.
How many sessions should you need with someone to determine whether or not it's a good fit, do you think?
Okay. Well, it's going to be different for every person. But my estimate, and I tell my own clients this when they meet me for the first time, because I might not be a good fit for them, as I say, you know, if we meet for two or three times, I think you'll have a sense of who I am and how I proceed and how you might relate to me. So sometimes that's required. Also, Celia, sometimes reaching out to your GP has a number of people that they've worked with in the past that they've developed trust or understanding with, and that can be a good resource. You could call me directly. I have a number of people that I work with, and I'm confident with their skill set and their abilities and who I've seen their work in a firsthand way. So I feel comfortable in referring to them myself.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll make sure to put the number out there. Thanks for the call, Celia. What is the number we should be giving out for you, Dr. Mara?
So my professional practice number is 416-453-2405.
Is there any social media, website, anything like that you wanted to put out there?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
I'm Luddite, my wife calls me. I don't think I'm quite that bad, but she constantly encourages me to move on those fronts. And maybe this is the motivation I'm required.
All right. Well, we'll start with that. And we've got Chris on the line. Chris, we're going to get to you right after a 1 minute break for traffic. We're with Dr. Frank Mara, psychotherapist for adolescents, young adults, couples, families. Welcome back to the Night Side. Barb DeJulie with Dr. Frank Mara, psychotherapist for adolescents, young adults, couples, families. Taking your calls, 416-872-1010, Star Talk, Star 8255. Text us at 71010 with your questions or comments. We've got Chris on the line. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're with Dr. Mara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call again, Barb. And thank you, Dr. Mara.
Hi, Chris.
I'll be really quick because I don't want to use up everybody's time. My daughter, who's just turning 13 this summer, her mother and I have been separated for 10-plus years. Okay. Her mother has been in university for a very long time, and about 8 years ago, I decided that it would be best for her to move to Thunder Bay. I am currently in the Durham region, so about 19-hour drive, in the hopes of repairing the relationship between the family figures, the mother and father. I decided that, okay, we'll do this as long as my access rights are okay. The long story short is my ex-wife got into child therapy, and even my daughter will say, yeah, Mom hates you. She talks bad about you. Now there's a new family dynamic. I'm married and have been with a new relationship for 5 years. My son's involved, 3. My daughter doesn't seem to have a problem. She seems actively interested. But there's something bothering her, and it has been for a long time. And I don't press her for information. I just try and talk to her. She's very closed around me. And now she's refusing to return my calls. And, you know, it's been over 2 months since I've spoken with her. And her mother, of course, basically says, well, she can make her own decisions. And she's been saying that to our daughter since she's been 6. So anytime my daughter has been upset about whatever, unfortunately her mother has used that as fuel. And I'm not sure what to do. I don't want to harm my daughter, and I'm at the point where I think she needs to have a serious talk between her and I. And I don't know at what point I should let her make her own decisions.
Chris, thank you for your question or series of questions. First of all, I'm going to highlight that what you've identified is certainly a complex question and a series of circumstances, one that I'm not going to denigrate by a quick answer. But my thought, Chris, is sometimes in our lived experience, we come across circumstances that are very complex. And conversations to develop an ongoing understanding of what's going on are sometimes extremely valuable. And while it might not address your situation immediately, secondary benefits can come out of that. So while go ahead.
Sorry. I've tried to have, without pushing my daughter when she's down, you know, let her know she's loved, and, you know, the doors are always open, and we try and keep lines of communication going. I'm just really scared at this point about the conversation. It's not just affecting me anymore. I have her brother to think about.
Yes.
I have my wife to think about. And my daughter is being allowed to make decisions that are above her intellectual level, I think. She's a very smart girl, but I'm afraid of saying the wrong thing and pushing her away. I've tried very hard to keep her in my life, but
Chris, if I would just step forward again and just move to a metaphor of digestion, it sounds like you've had a whole lot of emotional and psychological experience. And in digesting that, sometimes it's difficult for us to do it by ourselves. And as much as you identify your daughter, it is quite possible, Chris, that you too could benefit immensely from having a person to talk to about exactly what you've described in a very focused, caring, and supported way. And that an aftermath of those discussions can produce a more clear thoughts about how you should approach from here.
I suppose I have seen a few therapists about the situation over the past 10 years since the separation, 12 years actually, sorry. But the advice at the end is always, well, you just have to kind of, one day she'll realize you're not the monster you've been made out to be, right?
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. I'm just going to cut him because of the noise quality there. So a couple of really good points there. Is it true, because I think I've actually seen this happen in families, is it true that if one parent tries to turn the kids against the other parent, the kids do eventually realize? When they become adults, I've actually seen this happen where then they realize what the one parent did in trying to turn them against the parent. But is that enough for the parent to have to just sit and wait for that to happen?
Well, a couple of questions there. But to start with your question first, yes, I believe that our children and adolescents are really good monitors of what is genuine and what is inauthentic. And that sometimes when parents try to maneuver the children in a strategic way to serve their own interest, that in the final analysis, what comes to light is the fact that they've been manipulated. So that quite in the way that you describe, the adolescents and the children find their way to a truth that is their truth that was not necessarily connected to one of the two parents. The other point I wanted to pick up on was Chris brought up, look, I've reached out to a variety of people and the advice I've received is X, Y, and Z. I want to be very clear about this. In psychotherapy, it's not a game of advice. If you're receiving advice in psychotherapy, I ask you to question the person you're working with, because the best that can be offered to you is an evolving, developing, and growing understanding of your circumstances. At the end of the process, hopefully you will have a better footing to give yourself advice. But if you're stepping into a psychotherapeutic setting and the person is offering, and I do hear stories about this, ongoing advice about circumstances, then I would suggest that you're not getting the benefit that you...
That is such a great point, because I know people who have gone to some therapist or another about a situation that they're having difficulty with, and they have been told sort of along the same lines, well, you either have to accept it or you have to, and then so, that's advice.
Yeah, and I can also speak to that because I'm in the therapist's seat often during the course of the week, and a person comes to you with pain and suffering in their lived life, and they want definitive solutions and often quick solutions to their pain and suffering. It takes a considerable amount of endurance on my behalf, you know, to not offer that, because I genuinely, authentically feel offering that does not offer them a sustainable value for their lived experience. It's not going to generate anything that's particularly valuable to them. So as much as if magically I had the power in the world to solve these problems quickly, I'm sure I would maneuver on that. But outside of that ability, I'm certainly not going to offer something that I don't believe is prudent or valuable, which is quick advice about circumstances. What I can offer is this slower process called psychotherapy, which I do believe in 100% when done correctly, which can produce something called understanding.
I know this is last minute, but can we keep you for another 20 minutes?
Okay.
All right. Okay. There's so much still to cover. And you know what I wanted to delve into, and we will after the top of the hour. The last call really brought this out for me. We can talk about the effect of divorce on kids.
Absolutely.
And also a story that we both looked at today. What happens and when should a parent call the police on their child, which is a huge one. That and more, and we'll continue with your calls. Dr. Frank Mara is here, psychotherapist for adolescents, young adults, couples, and families. 416-872-1010, star talk, star 8255. Text us at 71010. It is The Night Side on In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. And welcome back to the show. We've got a few more minutes with Dr. Frank Mara, psychotherapist for adolescents, young adults, couples, and families. We are taking your calls. Any questions you have regarding any issues that may be going on in your family, 416-872-1010. Star Talk, star 8255, or you can reach us via text at 71010. And I do have a text question here for you, Dr. Mara. My girlfriend has a son who she raised unilaterally. He is 16 years old, and she still does everything for him. She lives through him. It's like he is her existence. Is that normal?
Okay.
Is anything normal, by the way?
No, that's a separate question. And sometimes it's difficult for me in these situations to offer any sort of input that's particularly definitive, because, of course, this is a short text, and who am I to say what is the deeper meaning here? What I'd prefer is to, if it would be available, to talk to her, maybe the son. But in the limited confines of that text, a lot seems out of key. And no human being should live exclusively for another human being. It does harm to both human beings. Now, that's the key point, because we largely assume that, the person who's perpetually giving, there's some loss there. But the person who's receiving everything, well, where is the problem there? There's a huge problem. Because in the world we inhabit, there's reciprocity that is required. There's an ability to give and take. There's a necessity to negotiate the social, the public square. These things would not be available to the young man being described in this short text. And that does no service to him. And more obviously, it doesn't do much of a service to a person who's just exclusively giving of themselves to another human being.
So if all that boy is used to is having things done for him, he doesn't know how to do for others.
Totally. And he's being robbed of an essential part of the lived experience, that he too is a receiver and a giver in the world. And in order to be healthy and functional in the world, you need to have some capacity to understand both sides of that equation. And while we think we're giving exclusively to this person because we're taking care of all of their needs, aren't we also robbing something from him?
How then, if somebody is in that position, how do they back away? How do they make the adjustments so that it's not as unbalanced as one person giving and one person receiving?
Well, first, I have no reason to believe that
if you could answer that in 10 seconds.
I think it's
a tough one.
It requires buy-in from both people. And buy-in doesn't happen immediately for both people, but it requires for both of them to see that there's something to be gained by a new configuration of the relationship. Mm. And sometimes that takes time.
And I'm sure sometimes not everybody wants to go along with it.
No, but that's okay too, because that's an authentic space.
I don't know if that is what we were talking about, but I was going to ask you about, and again, this is a huge question that I'm going to give you a short time to answer, but the effect of divorce on kids. And what I hear and have heard for years is that by the parents, kids are fine. They adjust. They'll get used to it. Is that true, or does it have a long-lasting effect on kids?
Okay.
In 30 seconds or less.
Sure, let me take a run at this. Well, listen, I'm going to bracket all of the empirical evidence on that and hold that for another guest to show up. What I'm going to approach this is by people who I've worked with in psychotherapy, couples I've worked at who were on the verge of breaking up who had children. It's important for people to have invested adults in their life. If that can be two people, that's wonderful. If it is only one person and the person is stable and invested, that can be healthy too. It's these circumstances are such that they involve a multitude of other variables. So sometimes each of this is kind of a unique entity to themselves. So it's hard for me as somebody who works on the front lines of this to prognosticate broadly about this, but I've seen it work in both configurations, and I know that to be true.
A story that I came across in the Toronto Star and sent to you about parents getting to the point of having to call the police on their children. Okay. That has got to be one of the worst things I can imagine a parent having to do. You're running the risk of giving your child a criminal record, which has huge, huge implications. But also the point that the story brought up is the sense of betrayal on behalf of the child.
First, and the writer's name escapes me, but I wanted to commend the paper, the Toronto Star, and the writer for approaching this topic.
Isabel Teotonio.
I think it's an important topic. I think it's an area that hasn't had much exploration in the public square, and it does happen. I'm sure that police statistics can speak to the significance. This, I imagine, could not help but being a desperately difficult situation for any parent who found themselves in that circumstance. But the circumstances are desperate. What the article talks about are situations where somebody is in the household who is unduly violent and volatile, so much so that they can put parents and other children at risk, and that the only way to respond to the situation in the short run is to call the police. Those are desperately difficult circumstances. What I liked about the article, too, is that they gave some preview. There was a Dr. Unger at Dalhousie in the Department of Social Work, and right here in the city, Dr. Kornblum, who's at the Hinks Delcrest, speaking to the psychosocial implications for the child. Because true enough, this behavior, which is on the borderline of criminality, didn't arrive, in one fell swoop. There's probably, somebody in the article used the word incubator, a period of incubation where these behaviors gain strength and traction. And some of the people being interviewed mused, wouldn't it have been valuable if somehow this could have been approached upstream? And of course, given my vocation in life, I'm somebody who values that considerably and knows
what does that mean, approaching it upstream?
I'll give a personal example from I'm a psychotherapist. I have a 5-year-old daughter. When I don't intend in a focused way to my parenting work, I can see things become problematic. And part of my parenting work is to regulate my daughter's emotions and behaviors and help her understand her thoughts. Now, sometimes the complexity of my lived life is such that I'm not so on top of that job. I have this great example. You know, last summer I was away on family vacation with my in-laws, and we're a big family and we're having fun and there's a lot of things going on. You know, at several key times I could see things that I should have addressed but didn't address. Those problems don't go away. They just grow. So when we get back to the home and things are more focused, there was work I needed to catch up with. I draw the same parallels with this story in the Star. These children do not, I believe, get to a place of violence and volatility in one step. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it happens in hundreds of small steps where no supports were available to help them regulate their emotions, understand their behaviors, and have relation to the full variety of their thoughts. That's hard, mundane work. And sometimes in our busy lives, we don't have the time for it. But at what expense?
Dr. Frank Mara, thank you so much for this.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been a lot of fun. And Dr. Mara is a psychotherapist. He works with adolescents, young adults, couples, and families. If you would like to get in touch with him, 416-453-2405.
You've been listening to a segment from the Best of the Night Side with Barb DiGiulio podcast. Log on, listen, and download the latest podcast right now by visiting newstalk1010.com.